Okay, folks, let's get started. I'm Mahesh Marina. I'm going to be the lecturer for this course on Computer Communications and Networks course. There's a third year course as per the course descriptors, but as usual, we have a diverse group of students attending. The plan for today is I'm going to give you a short overview about the course itself and then start the introduction to computer networking. Okay, so that's the plan for today. And feel free to ask questions. Since we have a large class, that doesn't mean that we should be a quiet class. So I would welcome questions before the class, during the lecture, and also after the lecture. And of course, feel free to email me or the TA about any questions you may have about the coursework part of the course. So this course, it is an introductory course on computer networking. How many of you have done computer networking courses in the past? Okay, handful of you. So for the rest of you, I think, you know, this is pretty much the first time you would get to see computer networking from an inside-out perspective. So I think, you know, that is hopefully what you take away at the end of the course in terms of what makes computer networks work. And what we're going to look at are some of the fundamental concepts and design principles underlying the internet in particular, which is the mother of all networks, and also widely used techniques. So these techniques do various kinds of network functions, and we will get a sample of those by looking at internet as an example. No prerequisite courses, which is a good thing. So that's why we have some second year students as well. And coursework involves programming. I think if you are not very comfortable programming, I think, you know, try and get comfortable in the next few weeks. There's a fair amount of programming you have to do. I think you will be better off for that by the end of the semester. Not because of programming, but I think by having some hands-on experience working with protocols. This course is a prerequisite for the next year's computer networking course, which is an advanced form of this course. I will be co-teaching that course usually. My focus would be typically on wireless networking, but things might change next year. But if you are intending to do fourth year networking course, this is a combined master's and fourth year networking course, so if you plan to do that, then you are required to take this course. And some of you who are in the third year now would be wanting to do networking projects in the fourth year. So typically we ask that everyone who does a networking project in the fourth year, in the honors projects, you're required to have taken this course and have done well. And if I'm the project proposer, then I would make sure that the students take this course. Okay. So that's sort of a brief overview of the course. In terms of the administrative details, I think most of it is self-evident. Since you have already made it to this lecture theater, so I think you know where we're going to meet. So we're going to meet Mondays and Thursdays. And pretty much we will not have any break until early March. Towards the end of the semester, I'll have one of our network engineers talk about informatics networks. So this is sort of a tradition we have been following in the past few years. This particular person from informatics has been familiar with, has been involved with the informatics networks deployment back from the 1970s. So you get a historical perspective and also a view into how things have changed dramatically in the past 3-4 decades. Okay. So this is something very useful for you to put some of the course material in a real context. We have a course teaching assistant, mainly for the programming assignment. So those details in terms of his email ID and so forth would be available from the course website. Syllabus-wise, we will follow a top-down approach looking at applications down to the physical layer. But the physical layer part, since we are computer scientists and not looking at the electrical engineering aspect of networking, the communications media part of it would be covered as part of the introduction. Okay. So basically, I will give a very high-level overview, some of it today. The rest of it, our main focus would be in these four layers, application transport, network, and data link layers. And some of the topics, the key topics in under each of those layers are listed there. For instance, condition control and flow control, error control, and so forth. So these are classical problems in networking. We will look at each of them as we go through the semester. So I think, you know, that's all I have to say for now. As we go along, I'll have more to say about these things. In terms of what we're going to do in this semester, we'll have the usual lectures, 2 lectures per week. The main activity from your standpoint would be the coursework. The part that is going to be marked is a substantial coursework assignment. This, in the past, used to be 2 coursework assignments having about 3-4 weeks each. Based on feedback from previous years, I tried to cut down on the coursework this year. But you will have a 40% weighting still. So the single coursework would now weigh 40% as opposed to 2 coursework assignments in the past. So which is a good thing for you. There's more time you have in your hands to work on this assignment. So that's again a good thing. Hopefully, those of you who are in the third year, I understand that you have many assignments to deal with and it's a particularly stressful year. So hopefully, I'm contributing my part to reducing your stress. Okay. So the assignment would involve Java and Socket API. I'm going to talk about what Socket API means in a couple of lectures from now. And it would involve implementation of standard protocols and experimenting with them on DICE machines. So that's basically what the assignment is in a high level. And you have the usual final exam in April, May. Textbooks, I'm going to mainly follow the first one here, Kuros and Ross. There is a new edition out, 5th edition. If you happen to have the 4th edition, that's fine. There isn't a whole lot of change between the 4th and the 5th. So you don't need to buy the latest edition if you already have the older one. But if you're planning to buy, then I think it's a good idea to get the 5th edition. I think library should have a few copies of the 4th edition. Not sure about the 4th one. Not sure about the latest one, sorry. From time to time, I'm also going to refer to this other book by Peterson and Davey, which is a very good reference as well. So it's a good idea to at least refer to that by looking at the library copies. The last book used to be the classic computer networking text until a few years ago. Now it's a bit dated, but still it's a very useful reference for some of the classical problems. So that's about the overview to the course. Any questions so far? No questions. Hopefully, I assume that everything seems to be clear so far. So one other request I have, like I said, I certainly encourage you to ask questions, but also one other thing is to keep your mobile phones turned off or put it in an airplane mode if you have smartphones. Okay, I think that would help not just me, but also rest of your course students. So these lecture slides would be up on the course website later today or by tomorrow at the latest. Typically, I put them up after the lecture. But some of these lectures, lecture slides cover material for multiple lectures. So you would have them usually up front. So, like I said, the plan for today is to introduce you, start the introduction to computer networking. So what we are going to do in this course, broadly speaking, would be trying to get an in-depth understanding of some of the topics listed here. So what we will do in the course of the next couple of lectures is to get an overview of these topics, and then we'll delve into the details later on in the semester. So the first obvious question is, what is the internet? Because we are going to use the internet as a case study to study computer networking. So that's something that we will first look at. And then the term protocol is very central to computer networking. Computer networking and protocols are pretty much synonymous. Not because they mean the same thing, but pretty much computer networking is all about protocols. So we need to understand what protocols mean. So that is, again, something that we will look at. We'll look at a wide range of protocols as we go through the semester. And in terms of what computer networks involve, we will look at some of the underlying components. And quantifying network performance is a key aspect for any network engineer. So be it for administration purposes or for research purposes or to run a network as big as the internet, performance monitoring is quite important. So it's important to understand how to reason about network performance starting from first principles. So that's what we're going to do in this introductory series of lectures. And the other topic that I'm going to look at is protocol layers and service models. So this is something, again, which is very important to computer networking in terms of how a complex and a very large network like the internet functions by and large in a smooth and reliable way. And part of it has to do with the architecture underlying the internet. So it allows for heterogeneous components, geographically distributed, very large number of them, to internetwork in a seamless and in a reliable way. So this is something we have to study when we look at computer networking. So I'm going to talk about that. Regarding security and history part of it, I'll let you read, because security is not the main focus of the course, but it's certainly an important element of computer networking. So I would encourage you to read that section from the chapter. And history is, as always, interesting and important. So talking about security, one thing I would suggest for those of you who are in the third year is to take the computer security course in the second semester. I think that's a good companion course for those of you who want to do a good set of systems courses in your undergraduate degree. Operating systems this semester is a good course to take as well. So in a way, we have a good number of systems courses offered in the third year, and it's important that you have a broad coverage of these courses. So that's about that. So basically, in terms of the plan, I already indicated what we're going to do, but this is how the chapter outline is in the textbook, in the primary textbook, Gross and Ross. Okay. So let's get on with on the plan. So the question is, first question is, what's the internet? Now, the usual thing we try and do when we try to define something as engineers is to look at what a particular system comprises of. So that's the nuts and bolts view. What does the internet comprise of? What are the underlying components? Okay. So from that perspective, internet involves lots of end user devices, like your laptops, phones, everything that is connected to the internet. Okay. There are a wide range of things that are connected to the internet these days. And these devices run applications that use the internet. So in a way, you have network applications hosted on those devices. So therefore, those devices, the end user devices, sometimes are referred to as hosts. Okay. So that is one key component of a network. And this includes the internet as well. And then these devices connect to the internet through communication links, both at the edges and also in the core of the internet. Okay, so there are nodes and links in a network, like in any network, where in the context of the internet, you have the edge networks, like the mobile network or the home network or the institutional networks, and then you have the core networks. And in all of these components, you have links interconnecting various nodes, okay? And the nodes differ depending on which part of the network you're looking at. So nodes in the core of the network are usually the routers, which are operating at very high speeds. Nodes within a home would be mainly end-user devices, but you still have a broadband router, typically. Okay. And these communication links come in many different varieties. We'll look at some of them in a few moments. But so broadly speaking, you have wired media and wireless media. So depending on the way you connect to the internet, you may be using both, or you may have used both already. And like I said, you know, there are routers which are mainly relevant in the core of the internet. So in terms of end user devices, there are traditional devices like your laptops and phones and printers. So fax machines, all of these are traditional devices, but increasingly there are a wide range of new type of devices that you normally think they are not internet connected. but that's changing. So like, for instance, in the informatics forum, every phone is connected to the internet. So pretty much we use the phone on my desk runs voice over IP. Okay. So this is something becoming very common within enterprises. But that's again more close to the traditional type of an end user device. You have, you know, this is very funny device. So I think, you know, you have lots of these things coming up, and that's one very good aspect of the internet is the architecture, and the underlying model allows the applications to be innovated regardless of the core of the internet. So lots of the internet, routers in the core of the internet remain unchanged. All applications run in the edge of the internet. So therefore, you have many different kinds of applications emerging pretty much every day. And with the smartphone devices now, you have even more newer apps emerging that use the internet without having to change the internet structure or protocols or anything within the internet. So that's a very good aspect about the internet to enable such innovation. So in terms of the structure of the internet, we have roughly a hierarchical network. You have the core of the internet, and then you have edge networks. So in that sense, the core is at a higher level compared to the edge networks. And the core itself is tiered. You have multiple tiers comprising the core, and that adds to a few more layers of the hierarchy. So that's how the internet is structured. We'll look at the structure of the internet a bit more later on, maybe next lecture or the one after that. In terms of communication, of course, you know, what we have talked about so far is mainly about the hardware components. You have the links, you have the nodes, and the different types of nodes. So this is what I mentioned so far. But actual communication happens using protocols. And that's usually the software layer of the network. So some of the protocols are implemented in hardware, but by and large, most of the protocols, especially the network layer and above, everything is implemented in software. Sometimes within the operating system, sometimes outside the operating system kernel. So these layers pretty much comprise of a variety of protocols at each layer. So some examples are listed here. No need to worry about what those acronyms stand for. We'll look at them in detail later on. But protocols, like I said, they are the heart of computer networking, very important. And since protocols are so important, it's important that, you know, we have standardized protocols. Otherwise, you know, communication between different protocol implementations becomes impossible, especially in a network as large as the internet. So you have standards. IETF is a key standardization body for the internet. And, the standards, internet standards, are typically referred to as requests for comments. The name is historical, but typically you have RFC, some number, and you have thousands of these RFCs currently. And these are open to the public. These are public domain specifications of protocols. So it's a good idea to look at some of the protocols that you encounter in this course and refer to the corresponding RFCs to get an idea of what a protocol specification involves. So they sometimes can be quite detailed and lengthy, but they are quite instructive as well in terms of they pretty much provide the blueprint to implement a protocol. And so long as different implementations conform to the same RFC, you would pretty much expect that they are compatible and they can interoperate with each other. Okay, so these standards are a key element that go hand in hand with the protocols in the internet. So this is the nuts and bolts view of what the internet means. There is another view of looking at the internet, maybe a view that you all carry so far. Those of you who haven't had a computer networking course so far, the natural view is to look at the internet as a black box providing you connectivity. And that's about it. And it allows you to run your apps, and you really can't care less what's inside it. Okay. So that is the service view. That's another view of looking at the internet. So it's just an infrastructure. It gives you a way to connect with your peers or friends or, with various services you have over the internet, like Amazon or Google or various types of things. In that sense, pretty much you look at the internet as a service provider for your apps, not in any different sense, but basically to run your apps, you need certain support, and that support is provided by the internet. And that support at the basic level is just connectivity, but
Hello?
What's happening? I have no idea what's happening. Hopefully this is some noise affecting our communication. So at a top level, it is basically about connectivity. You want to connect with other entities, be it other end users or servers. But at a more detailed level is about what kind of connectivity you are offered. So it could be a service which gives you reliability. It could be a service which gives you some sort of a guarantee or in terms of timeliness. It could be a service which gives you some guarantees in terms of security. And it could be a service which sort of combines some of these aspects. So in a way, connectivity is a very broadly defined term, but to qualify it, you need to take into account various aspects of communication, okay, in terms of timeliness, in terms of reliability, in terms of security, and so forth. Okay. So that's another way to look at the internet as a communications infrastructure providing service to communication service to apps. Now, let's look at what a protocol means. So protocol is something that's easy to understand because we always follow protocols in our daily lives. Of course, in terms of interpersonal communication, but also when we are on the road, when we are driving, for instance, if you're at a roundabout, for instance, you follow a protocol. Okay. So there is a protocol which defines how you should maneuver through the roundabout or various aspects of driving. And similarly, when you're at the airport, when you're trying to fly, you follow the series of steps to get to your gate in terms of going to check in your luggage and so forth, going through security and so forth. So these are protocols which we are used to. Sometimes we don't even consciously think about them. Okay. The protocols in the context of the internet are no different at an abstract level. Pretty much they're also a specification of what you should do to achieve a task, okay, a high-level task. And the only difference is, in the context of internet, you're dealing with machine-to-machine communication, typically. It's not human-to-human communication. So there is no room for vagueness there. So you need to be very precise in terms of what the protocol means. In human communication, there could be a lot of vagueness. I could be saying things in a certain way, and you could misinterpret them and understand in a very different way. So that is possible in human communication, but that's not allowed in a machine-to-machine context. So that's important to bear in mind. So to properly define what a protocol means in the context of computer networking in general, but also the internet in particular, it's basically about the format of the messages that are exchanged and in what sequence they are exchanged. So what is the relationship between your transmission of messages and various activities you do as a communication entity, and when a particular timer goes off, what you would do, when you receive a message, what you would do. All of these things that you do as a part of the communication is essentially a protocol. Okay? So more formally, you have this as the definition of a protocol. So protocols essentially define the format, the order of messages sent and received among the network entities, and the actions you take when you receive a message, when you transmit a message, and when a certain event happens. So I think event is not mentioned here, but events are very important as well. So oftentimes, events drive protocols, like for instance, timers. So you're trying to have reliable communication support implemented in your network. And this is typically done by some sort of a handshake where you are expecting an acknowledgement for a message you have sent. You may not receive an acknowledgement for a long time. Then the way the sender would find out that the message is lost or corrupted on the way is by just having a timer expiring. Okay, so that's an example of an event that drives the protocol forward in terms of making it retransmit the possibly lost message, and then trying to have another timer initiated so that it can track the fate of the retransmitted message. Okay, but basically you have you can look at transmission and reception as also events. So you have pretty much events, communication-related events that drive what you should do in terms of actions. And the combination of these events, actions, and the exact format of the messages pretty much comprise your protocol. Okay. Let's look at an example. So on the left, you have a very simple human-to-human protocol. So no need to explain this at all. A very similar situation happens when you're trying to access a web page. For instance, the web page for the course textbook. Okay, so for this, you would use the web protocol, the HTTP protocol, and underlying that is a transport protocol called TCP. So this is a high-level description of what kind of protocol is followed to fetch a web page. Okay, so you try to establish a connection with the web server, and you get the web page, and then in return you get the web page file. okay, and that is rendered on your browser. So pretty much you can see that in a, this is something which is very obvious if you were to think of what happens when you want to get a web page, but looking at it in terms of a protocol is useful because you know this, these are the type of protocols we deal with. Of course, then these are very simple type of protocols. There are more subtle and non-trivial type of protocols you deal with, especially routing protocols. As we look at them later on in this course, you would understand that there are a wide range of protocols, some complex, some very straightforward. Okay, so but nevertheless, protocols are key. So that's broadly about what the internet is and what a protocol means. Now, let's look at the network edge in a little bit more detail. So we've seen that network edge essentially comprises of hosts and applications, and they connect via various media. You have various types of access networks. So if you are at your home, typically you would be connecting via your home wireless LAN, which is Wi-Fi. And you may have a broadband router that is connecting to the internet via copper, like DSL or cable modem or fiber. If you are within the university, you typically would be connecting via an Ethernet infrastructure, either directly or via the Wi-Fi access. Inside the core of the internet, you have routers which are interconnected together. And then that itself is a hierarchical network. It's a network of networks. Okay, so that's sort of something that we've seen before. Let's focus on the edge part of it. So you have various types of hosts or end systems. So depending on the applications that you're dealing with, they are given different names. So the traditional type of application...
It should be working now. Getting signal here. Okay. Yeah, yeah, sure.
So depending on the applications, I'm not sure if there is any correlation with what I'm talking and what's coming up. Maybe there is. But sorry?
Is it working now? I am getting the signal here.
Yes.
Yeah, you got me? Cool. Turn it off.
Anyway, back to what we are talking about. So depending on the applications you run, different end hosts or end systems are given different names. So the traditional applications, like for instance the web access or email, they are referred to as client-server applications because typically there is one endpoint of that communication which is just making a request and getting the response. And the other endpoint is actually providing the response. So the endpoint that provides the response in when it receives a request is referred to as a server. And the endpoint which actually initiates the request is called the client. So these are a wide range of traditional apps that fall into this category called client-server applications. These include web, email, file transfer, everything pretty much until a few years ago. Once you have voice communication over the internet started and also apps like BitTorrent and other peer-to-peer applications emerged, you have a different class of applications that have come up. These are called peer-to-peer applications. Here, there is no difference between the client and the server. The server acts as a client for some other server. So essentially, the client and server functionality is combined within a particular end system. Like for instance, you may have a file that you're providing to your neighbor in a peer-to-peer network, okay? And in that sense, you might be first getting the file from someone else and handing the file to someone else. So in that sense, you are essentially a peer, and the model for the application is peer-to-peer applications. So what these end systems, the role the end systems play is very much dependent on the applications they run, okay? So that's the key point to take away here. Because the end systems are the entities that participate in the applications, and they have a particular role depending on the nature of the application. Regarding the communication media, like I said, there are various types of media that we use, sometimes without much awareness. So these are some of the types of media that we usually encounter within various usage contexts. So in a home context, you typically have a wireless access point providing you sort of wireless coverage within your home. When you're out and about, you may be connecting to the internet via your phone. You have a cellular base station providing coverage, a set of base stations providing coverage across the whole city. And when you're inside the university, if you're using a university machine, then typically you're connected to the switched Ethernet infrastructure within the university. Or if you're connecting via your laptop, you may be using the wireless access provided by the university. So as you can see here, we already have three different types of media that we are dealing with. As we go to the core of the internet, you have other types of media that come up. And if you also take into account the various media between the home network and the internet, there are other possibilities that come up, okay? So one key aspect to keep in mind about various communication media is they differ in terms of the type of speeds they provide. Okay, and also one of the other differences is whether they are shared media or dedicated. Okay, so wireless by nature is a shared media. So pretty much whoever is connecting by wireless to the access points, they are sharing with other users connecting to the same access point. On the other hand, if you're using the Ethernet infrastructure, the current deployments of Ethernet is switched Ethernet, which is essentially like having a point-to-point link between you and wherever you're connecting to. So essentially, that's a dedicated media. Okay, so that's a crucial distinguishing characteristic of a communication medium. So dial-up mediums, modems, these are now dated. So very few of us, hardly any one of us, use dial-up modems today. But they have their historical relevance because a lot of broadband access technologies today have emerged out of this. In particular, the DSL and various flavors of DSL you have are closely tied to the dial-up modem technology. So the key thing about the dial-up modem is it's an analog communication method. Essentially, you use your phone line to send data. So whenever you want to send some bits, like for instance, whatever is on this slide, you try and take the digital representation and send it on the phone line as an analog signal, okay? And then do the reverse conversion on the other side, okay? So that's how the dial-up modem functions. Now, in terms of the definition of broadband, dial-up modem doesn't fit into the definition of broadband for two reasons. One, it offers very low speeds, 56 kilobits per second. That's the typical maximum speed you get. And it is not always on. I think, you know, this is the key reason why it is not seen as a broadband technology today. So you can either talk on the phone or connect to the internet via the dial-up modem, but not both at the same time. The reason is you're pretty much sharing the same phone line in an analog way. Okay, so pretty much either or scenario. A slightly rehashed version of this gives you the DSL technology, which is by far the most common broadband access method here in Britain, and most of Europe, actually. So the idea here is you move from the analog communication in the dial-up modem case to a digital communication. So you essentially try and separate out the voice communication from the data communication. And the voice communication happens in a particular frequency here, between 0 to 4 kilohertz. And the rest of the bandwidth is used for data communication, some for more of it for upstream and some of it for downstream. And the setup is it's very similar to what we have before. You are still using the phone line. You have a new add-on device called the splitter, which tries to divide the data communication from the phone communication. And you have the DSL modem, which actually acts as an intermediary between your actual computer device and the network. So on the network side of things, you have previously, it's just the telephone switch in the central office. Now you have a multiplexer called the DSLAM, or DSL access multiplexer. So this and the DSL modem form the endpoints of your access network. So these, the DSL, in the first generation of DSL, you have 8 megabits and downstream and 1 megabit upstream, but there are various different varieties of DSL out there. The one that is common these days is 24 megabit per second downstream. So partly the advancement has come about because limitation for DSL is the distance between the home and the central office. If you have more of these DSLAMs deployed in a neighborhood, then automatically your data rate goes up. So as the distance between the DSLAM and the home modem reduces, the data rate improves. Okay, so that's one reason why you have higher speed DSL variants. But the other is better ways to deal with noise, better ways to separate the different DSL signals happening in close proximity. Okay. That's in a very high level how DSL functions. The other type of cable modem technology broadband access technology that is out there is the cable modem technology. So in Britain, Virgin offers the cable modem based internet access. So the idea here is essentially you have the cable TV network that doubles as your internet access network as well. Essentially, you have a cable drop at every home, and this also carries your data signals. So in that sense, it's a broadcast network. Pretty much whatever is being received by you is received by everyone else as well. It's just that they filter out whatever is not meant for them. So for the TV signals, there is no need for filtering because everyone needs to get the same thing because it's sort of a one-to-many broadcast type of a communication. For data communication, it's usually point-to-point, so therefore you reject whatever is not meant for you, but you're still part of a broadcast network. Okay. So the architecture is something like this, where you have the internet. You have a level of distribution network, and then towards the edge of the network, you have a fiber head end. One of the fiber nodes provides you access. And from there, you have a coaxial cable that runs through multiple houses, about maybe 100 to 1,000 houses. And you are one of those houses. So you have a modem at your house which taps into that cable line. Okay? So pretty much this part of it is the broadcast network. Okay? So this is shared. So if you have all users accessing the internet at the same time, then per user,